Yeah, man, how you doing?
On,
you good?
On, I know you like on, that.
Man,
I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
This is the Saturday show here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Welcome on in on this Saturday morning. My name is Jake Hatch. I am your co-host typically here. Typically have Michelle Bodkin along for the ride, but she is on her way, making her way towards Rice-Eccles Stadium. I'm sure there is a number of you doing similar for the 22 Forever game, Utah's annual spring game taking place at Rice-Eccles Stadium at 11 o'clock this morning is when it'll begin. So as such, Michelle will be joining us from the road, as we like to say, in our next segment. But wanted to say welcome in to all of you. Hope you're having a fantastic morning, day, whatever you want to term it, whenever you listen to this, whether it's live or on demand. That's the best part about this show is we podcast all of this. If you miss it, you can go back and listen to it. Hey, it's what we do in the sports media universe these days. It's on demand. It's live. We cover it all. And we have it all available for you guys whenever you want to consume it. But I'm going to dispense with a lot of the pleasantries on today's show because there is a lot to get to. There's a lot going on in the sports universe here in the state of Utah. And we'll get back to our highlights of the week and the like coming up next week. But crazy news. Now, I will say this. We have been alluding to this, kind of tiptoeing around it, saying it in some circumstances. But folks, the National Hockey League is coming to the Beehive State. I don't know how to say it any more clearly than what we have been saying here on the KSL Sports Zone all week long and all the shows. But the Arizona Coyotes are coming to Salt Lake City. Reports emerged last night from Phoenix Sports, Hockey Night in Canada, and then ESPN also had it. I'm reading from Emily Kaplan's story on ESPN saying Arizona Coyotes players were informed Friday the team is relocating to Utah, sources told ESPN, confirming a report by Phoenix Sports. Coyotes GM Bill Armstrong met with the players ahead of their game against the Edmonton Oilers, which, by the way, the Coyotes won 3-2 to confirm what has been rumored all week, that the NHL is working to facilitate a sale to Ryan and Ashley Smith, the owners of the Utah Jazz. The Coyotes will begin playing there next season. Folks, next season is this October. That is how quickly this is coming together. You will see National Hockey League action taking place this fall here in Salt Lake City. I don't want to say that we've been under-reporting or under-rating this move, but it is, it feels like in some ways it's been overshadowed by some of the other things going on in the sports universe. Let's acknowledge it for what it is. It is another professional franchise coming to Salt Lake City. It is one of the traditional big four sports coming to Salt Lake City. The Utah Jazz, for many, many years, operated unopposed in the professional sports sphere here in the state. And with Real Salt Lake joining the fray in 2004, they took a little bit of an audience in their own right. They have a more of a niche audience with Major League Soccer, but essentially, we've had those two pro sports. Now, you also can mix in the Utah Warriors in rugby, the Utah Archers in the Premier Lacrosse League that have recently come to Utah. There's also the Salt Lake Shred in professional disc, Ultimate Frisbee. So there are professional franchises here, but the Utah Jazz were the only one in Salt Lake City that we like to call one of the big four that called the Beehive State home. The National Hockey League is going to be the second one in here. Now, will we get Major League Baseball? It looks like that's a very real possibility, but that's probably not going to happen until the early 2030s if timelines has been projected by a number of individuals that cover MLB essentially are right. The NFL, it seems like it's a pipe dream for the NFL to ever come here, but the fact that we could go from one to three of the big four sports in a 5 to 10 year span is absolutely astounding to me. I think most of you understand that I am a native of this state. I grew up in Orem, Utah. I dreamed my entire life of having more sports to support, to go out and watch in this state, and it seemed for many, many years that it was just not meant to be. Salt Lake City was thought to be this backwater community that didn't have enough souls that could facilitate supporting a one major league franchise or one a professional franchise, much less two or three. I think this state, I'm going to stump for my home state because trust me, I'm as big a homer for the state of Utah as anybody out there. I'm going to say this. the fact that there's been concerns about the Coyotes and the Jazz, and there's going to be a rebrand of the Coyotes' name, it sounds like. We'll see what the announcement is. There's supposed to be an announcement coming up as soon as this Thursday, this coming Thursday, I should say, from Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, announcing this move formally of the Coyotes making the move to Utah. And I would imagine they would rebrand it maybe that very day or shortly thereafter. But the bigger news is there's been some concern about these are two sports that literally overlap for the most part on their seasons. They both play 82 games. They both play from the late fall to early summer if the playoffs extend that far. And I can understand the concern of that. But let me just say this. The state of Utah, we are the quote-unquote state of sport. And I know we have rabid sports fans here. I freely admit that I am I'm relatively green when it comes. No, I'm not relatively green. I am very green in terms of my hockey knowledge. I am starting to do a deep dive on learning more about NHL and hockey in general because I want to be able to talk about it coherently and smartly. And I welcome any and all feedback. If any of you are hockey fans out there that are listening to the show, hit me up on social media. I would love nothing more than to ask for your help in helping me become a smarter sports media professional when it comes to talking about the NHL and talking about hockey in general. But let's also just celebrate the fact that hockey is coming here. It's a professional franchise. It is absolutely going to have support. I don't care what other people who do not know what the dynamics of the state are, that love to crap on it at times, want to say that it won't work. You don't know that. And I'm going to bet the other. I'm just going to go exactly the other way. The Utah Jazz have sold out the vast majority, if not all, of their games this season at home, despite them having a pretty rough run since the trade deadline. Now they have had two very decent performances back to back here as the season wraps up, and the regular season finale is tomorrow afternoon out there at Golden State. But I'm telling you, we need to celebrate the fact that we have NHL hockey coming here. Yes, it's going to have a new stadium built or a new arena built or a barn, I guess is what they call it, in hockey. I'm learning hockey lingo. I'm getting up to speed, folks. They're going to have to build something or retrofit the Delta Center to be able to be more amenable for the sight lines for hockey. We'll see what the ultimate plan is. But the Utah State Legislature has already earmarked a bunch of money. Was it $900 million for the hockey endeavor? There's $1 billion also on the books for MLB expansion. So the public-private partnerships between the state government and obviously the Smith family in this regard with regards to NHL hockey are there. This is awesome. I am very, very excited to be watching, talking, covering, learning, and just overall celebrating the fact that Major League Hockey has come here to Salt Lake City. Well, I'm smart enough to know what I don't know, and what I don't know is what the Phoenix Coyotes are going to bring to Salt Lake City. So that's why I'm going to step aside here and let Ian Mendez, one of the senior writers covering National Hockey League for The Athletic, he joined David James and Patrick Kinahan, the show I work on a daily basis here on The Zone, DJ and PK on Thursday morning, and he lends some insight into what the Coyotes roster looks like, what he believes they are capable of accomplishing, because they've had a little bit of a rough run of their own over the past decade or so with regards to making the postseason in NHL. So let's let Ian Mendez explain to you what to expect from the Phoenix Coyotes to make the transition now to Salt Lake City.
What are the folks of Utah getting with the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, in terms of a team on the ice, it's actually a pretty good team, like a good collection of young players. You know, they've got some super talented kids there. Young player by the name of Clayton Keller. He's kind of a game changer. Dylan Gunther is a young player. Like, they've got a really good young collection of players, and they haven't really been a consistent playoff team. And part of it for them is, I think, they've just constantly just given their financial sort of constraints in the last few years. They haven't really been able to be a legitimate team that can push for the playoffs. Like, they've boy, I want to say they've only made the playoffs once or twice here in the last, it feels like, decade or so. But they've got some really good players. Like I said, Clayton Keller's, you know, probably 24, 25 years old. He's really good. Logan Cooley was a first-round pick. He's a really dynamic player. So, like I said, they've got some really young pieces that if they come in there and I think they get sort of the support, you know, financially and maybe treated like a big league franchise, I don't think it's impossible that in a year or two from now they could be a legitimate playoff team.
Yeah, they've missed the playoffs 11 of the last 12 years, and they're in seventh place in division now. But this season, it seemed like they had something going. Just looking at their record here, they were four games over 500 in late January. They dropped 12 in a row, and it has been a mess since then. What happened to a promising season where, okay, maybe they're building something, and then it just all falls apart?
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, like, if you go back to September and October, there's a lot of people who said, you know, they could kind of be a dark horse if this and this and this and this happened. You know, it could bode well for them. Maybe they'll challenge for a playoff spot. And I would say up until, you know, kind of the All-Star break, which is early February, they were that team. They were getting great goaltending from Connor Ingram, who is kind of this great, fascinating human interest story. He's kind of overcome, you know, some hurdles in his personal life. And he's having a great year, but he was playing like out of his mind in December and January. And he sort of regressed a little bit. That's kind of been part of it. You know, but they're just a young team. Like I said, they got some guys that like Logan Cooley's a teenager, and it's really hard to be a great player in the National Hockey League really when you're a teenager. So I also wonder too, how much this has been weighing on them. Hey, where are we going to be playing next season? Because I think a lot of that stuff started in late January when people were wondering about, hey, what's the future of the Coyotes here? If we've got groups in, like, you know, Atlanta has expressed interest, Salt Lake has expressed interest, kind of in that same time frame of late January, and people have been wondering where the Coyotes going to play. And you always wonder from a human interest perspective, does that play on the minds of the athletes if they just don't know where they're going to be in 6 months from now?
There's really, as I see it, no way out for the Arizona people, because even if they get this land that they're trying to buy and that's coming up in the auction in June, you're still years away from that thing actually opening. And it looks cool next to the 101. I've seen all that. I grew up in Phoenix. I know the area, and it would be a great location, but it's still a long ways away, which means that they've got this I wouldn't call it an opportunity, but they're forced to play at the Arizona State Stadium. So this is, for the league, in a sense, this is an easier way out. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. And, you know, and I've been down there to the campus of Arizona State a couple of times this season to cover games. And listen, it would be a great atmosphere for a college game. If you're going to watch NCAA hockey at the highest level, and you're in a 4,800 seat venue or 5,000 seat venue, you'd love it. You'd think, this is awesome. This is great. Or if you were watching the Grizzlies play a game in that type of venue, you'd be like, okay, this is great. It just didn't feel like the big leagues. It just didn't feel like the National Hockey League. And so I think we've reached that point of no return where, okay, even if you did secure that parcel of land and everything went the way you said it would, we're looking at least three more years of playing in that venue. Whereas in Salt Lake, as you guys know, you got the Delta Center sitting there ready to go. And, you know, and I had a great conversation with Ryan Smith a few weeks ago. I talked to some officials with the Jazz. Like, they're pretty confident that they can, right off the hop, okay, we can get 11,000. I know it's configured for basketball, but they're like, you know, we can get about 11,000, maybe a few more. Well, right off the hop there, that's, you know, at least twice, if not closer to three times as much that you could get in Arizona. And then when they're ever done all of this arena stuff in your city, now you're going to be playing in sort of a brand new venue that, you know, tailor-made for this. And that's probably going to be ready in and around the same time as whatever they're going to do in Arizona, 3 years, 4 years, whatever down the road. So why wouldn't you, if you think that this is the ideal scenario, like Gary Bettman in the NHL, they don't think about what's best for the next 6 months or 18 months. They think about what's best for the next 5, 10, 20, 25 years. I think it's pretty clear that Salt Lake is this sort of untapped market that they could probably go back to Arizona if they wanted to at some point, but in the here and now, why wouldn't you take advantage of a better arena opportunity at Delta Center and then deal with Arizona down the road?
We're going to go ahead and make you the owner of the Utah whatever they're going to be called. Given the history of, you know, missing the playoffs 11 times in 12 years and being seventh in the division, if you own this club, would you blow everybody out, start hire your own GM and your own head coach and start fresh? Or do you think there's enough momentum and enough growth that they really ought to stick with the people in place? And given that they get away from this cloud of negativity you referenced with the whole team playing the second half of this season with the doubt about are we moving and where are we going and what's happening, do you think there's something to build off of here? And you'd keep the group together and let them build whatever it is they can build going forward.
Yeah, and that's a great question, right? Like I mean, if you look at franchise relocations in the past, like when Denver got its team, the Colorado Avalanche in the mid-90s, they kept a lot of the people, a lot of the roster together because they felt like they were on the precipice of greatness. And sure enough, in their first season in Denver, they won the Stanley Cup and they kept the general manager and they kept some continuity there. I don't think Arizona is on the precipice of being a Stanley Cup contender, but I do think that they're on the precipice of maybe being a playoff contender. They got a really good, charismatic coach named Andre Tourney. And, you know, what I think is really interesting is, you know, Ryan Smith, for all of his basketball acumen, I think is pretty well connected to the hockey world. Like, I think he, for example, you know, like I said, I chatted with him a few weeks ago. The thing I was really struck by was he's got a great relationship with John Cooper, who's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who won two consecutive Stanley Cups a couple of years ago. John Cooper is generally regarded as the best coach in hockey. And, you know, Ryan Smith has a direct line to him, and I don't think John Cooper's going anywhere, but it does open my mind up to the idea that, look, Ryan Smith is probably a pretty well-connected guy that, at the very least, will bounce ideas off of smart hockey people to say, you know, how close is this organization? Where are the gaps? That type of thing. So, I mean, if you're going to be spending north of, you know, $1 billion or whatever to bring an NHL team to your franchise to your city, I don't think it costs that much more to make some smart hires. Really, it's just a drop in the bucket, so to speak, if you're going to go out and get, you know, better coaching, better guys in your front office, that type of thing. But the shell of it is there for sure in Arizona. And like I said, I think they've built up a pretty good team. I think you can make the argument that their inability to take the next step has been sort of predicated on sort of financial handcuffs.
We saw with the Golden Knights when they came to Vegas, they were winners instantly. Could you tell us how they were able to do it? Because obviously they weren't down for very long because it didn't happen that way. And Arizona's been down. So explain to our listeners how it works in hockey and how you can quickly go from nothing to everything.
See, this is funny because the Vegas Golden Knights came in the NHL in 2017. But here's the difference between Vegas and what potentially could happen in Salt Lake with if the Coyotes end up in your city. And that is, Vegas was an expansion team, meaning they didn't inherit any players. They literally came into the league and they're like, all right, let's just start from scratch. And then they had an expansion draft. So every team in the league had to protect X amount of players. And then sort of quote unquote scrap heap, we'll call it. Vegas got to pick off the scrap heap. Now, what happened was Vegas was extremely smart. They made some shrewd moves, some shrewd trades, and they got really lucky. They got really smart. They were really smart, and they were good right off the hop. They went to the Stanley Cup final in their first year, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. It's almost an aberration, but they've been a really good operation in their first 5 or 6 years, but partially because they started from scratch. The situation that you're going to get, like I said, in Salt Lake City, if you get the Coyotes, is you're gonna bring a handful of really good young players. Like, I think if you went around the league and you asked people about the core of the Coyotes roster and where they're at, most people would say, like, that's a pretty good team. Like, that's a team that with the right tinkering and the right insulation, like I said, could be a playoff team as early as next year, but certainly in 2 years. So Vegas, it's really tough. And even Seattle, they kind of made the playoffs as an expansion team in their second year. It's tough to kind of expect that type of success right off the hop. But I think what's great about when you get a new team, I always think there's a honeymoon period, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, where people are just excited to come in. What is this? What's this hockey team everyone's talking about? And you get a little bit of runway to, you don't have to be great right away. And I think the timing of that might actually be perfect in Salt Lake City, because I think there'll be a honeymoon period of 2 or 3 years, and then it should coincide, I would think, with that Coyotes team, if that's who you get, being ready to be sort of a legitimate playoff Stanley Cup contender. You get your arena situation sorted out, and then you kind of really, in 3 or 4 years from now, I think can start to look at, hey, maybe we have championship aspirations here.
There you have it, Ian Mendez from The Athletic. A big thank you to him for joining DJ and PK. If you want to hear the entirety of that conversation, that was about half of it roughly, you can go search out DJ and PK wherever you get your podcast. It's also available on YouTube. Just search out DJ and PK under the KSL Sports channel there on YouTube, and you can listen to it. And Ian, I think, laid out a pretty decent overall look at what the Coyotes offer. A young team that is trying to build from the ground up. Gee, that sounds familiar. It always kind of sounds like what the Utah Jazz are endeavoring to do here. And we'll talk about the Utah Jazz here in just a little bit. I thought David Locke had a very insightful thought about how the Jazz are going about their rebuild, that we'll get to at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. But getting back to the point at hand with regards to the NHL, let's celebrate this, folks. This is an incredible, awesome thing. Like I said, I'm a kid who grew up in this state. I stand for the state of Utah as much as humanly possible. I love living here. I don't plan on ever leaving this state. It's just, it's in my blood, quite literally. And the fact that we're having another one of the big four sports coming to Salt Lake City, opening the door for NHL to relocate here, and I'm expecting that Major League Baseball won't be too far behind in the grand scheme of things. It probably wouldn't take until the early part of next decade, if you believe the timelines from a lot of the MLB insiders out there. But still, I'm a kid who grew up dreaming of having more professional sports to talk about, to celebrate, to root for in this market. And the fact that this is just mere months away, 6 months away, roughly, give or take a few days, that is exciting to me. And I am going to fully embrace the Salt Lake / Utah, whatever they are. If it is the Salt Lake Yetis or the Utah Yetis, great. I'm a big fan of the Utah Sasquatch or the Salt Lake City Sasquatch. If you guys want to, by the way, if you want to, let's talk about it on social media. Send in your name suggestions for what you want this rebranded franchise to be titled. What you want them to be named. I welcome it. Jacob C. Hatch on Twitter, the KSL Sports Zone on Twitter as well. Let us know what you would like to see the rebranded Salt Lake / Utah, whatever they are. Insert a name here for this new franchise. But once again, let's get ready, folks. This is going to be very, very exciting. I am excited to learn about hockey, to be able to talk about it intelligently, and it's going to be a summer's worth of work for me to get caught up on missing out for the first 37 years of my life, essentially, not watching all that much hockey, but looking forward to it all the same. All right, we'll flip over and talk some football coming up next. Utah spring ball coming to an end with their spring game today, the 22 forever game. We're going to catch up with Michelle Bodkin, my typical co-host here on the program, coming up next. Get her thoughts as she's on her way to Rice-Eccles Stadium. So stay tuned. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you all are doing well. It is time now to put the Michelle into the Jake and Michelle on the Saturday Show, as Michelle Bodkin is on her way up to Rice-Eccles Stadium. The Forever 22 game, a.k.a. the Utah Spring game, taking place today up there at RES. Michelle, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing really well. It's a gorgeous day. I'm so excited to finally have a nice day for spring ball. It feels like it's been a few years for Utah.
Well, I think it's been a few years for, it feels like, every program out there. But when you get days like today, you don't want to let them kind of go by the wayside. But looking forward to this one, as always. Give me your overall sense, Michelle. You've been obviously tracking and going up to these practices all spring camp long. Give me your sense of what, I guess, overall to expect from today's festivities.
Yeah, you know, I think this is more about just having fun, showcasing a little bit what they've been working on. Obviously, it's going to be a very vanilla version of that, one, to keep injuries at bay, and two, you're not trying to give your opponent any kind of film whatsoever.
Sure.
So, although, you know, it's still on the Pac-12 network, so good luck Big 12 opponents getting that. I think Utah, based off of everything people have said, based off of things that have been told to me, based off of things I'm reading, you know, some of my fellow constituents putting out there, it really feels like Utah's in a very comfortable, happy place with how spring ball went. It sounds like they really kind of checked off the boxes that they wanted to check off. And, you know, I'm expecting just a really fun game to kind of celebrate all that hard work for them.
Obviously, this commemorates the life and legacy of two fallen Utah football players. Do you feel like people still are able to Are they still able to go out there and honor the life and legacy of two of their teammates, even though some of the guys that were teammates of theirs have moved on?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just become a part of the culture. It's become a part of the way of how they run things. It's, you know, the work ethic that both Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe displayed in their time at Utah is still talked about to this day. Mm-hmm. And I think just the attitude and the leadership traits. And so while, you know, a lot of these guys now don't necessarily know these players, they're just the prime example of what a Kyle Whittingham Utah football team expects out of their players. And so while they don't know them, I think there's an understanding there of this is what the expectation is. This is what the expectation always has been, but it is better embodied in a way. And there is, I don't know, like I still get chills talking about it. Like I'm goosebumpy right now. I just think there's something interesting at play when you talk about 22 forever, when you talk about the lives and the legacies of both Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, that I don't think it's ever going to fully go away or fully disappear. Like that memory is really going to always live on for as long as people continue to tell that story.
Now, the backup quarterback storyline's kind of been, in my opinion, the most dominant one on the offensive side of the football, and we'll see how far that carries into fall camp, et cetera. But is there another storyline offensively, Michelle, that you feel like has developed this spring that maybe we have overlooked?
You know, I think we maybe haven't talked as much about the running back room as we probably should have. You know, that is a place where I think they're kind of sort of replacing some talent there, and they're kind of coming off of, you know, some years that have maybe been a little bit harder than you would typically expect, with injuries, with guys not handling their business on and off the field, that sort of thing. So, you know, you're kind of starting over, but you have some nice base pieces. You have, of course, Mekhi Bernard coming back, and he just barely talked about how sitting on the sideline last year just really helped him learn the playbook. And as he said, it's not that I never knew the playbook before, but it just helped him, I think, digest it in a different way. And so when you have a bunch of new guys kind of in there that haven't necessarily had to play a whole lot, you now have a leader that can act as a second coach. And Quinton Ganther was actually telling me that Mekhi has been very helpful in getting a lot of those guys up to speed, explaining things, you know, pulling guys aside, and just really taking the time to make sure that everybody's on the same page, everybody's ready to go. You have a guy like Jalen Glover that's been in the program for quite some time, and it sounds like he's just getting more comfortable with what it is he's supposed to do, what's expected of him. Obviously, he's going into his junior year, but I believe he's a redshirt sophomore, actually, now that I think about it. At this point in time, though, either way, he's been here 3 years, right? Regardless of what the title is. And so, you know, at this point, you expect him to be more comfortable and to be able to take on a bigger chunk of the leadership. And then you have a guy like Charlie Vincent, not necessarily a key player per se, but just a guy that's been in the program for a long time and everybody talks about his football IQ is through the roof. So again, that's kind of another coach-like player, and just again a good foundational guy. He's maybe not necessarily the best at anything, but he's just solid all the way around in the way that he operates. And then, you know, you have this smattering of new guys that we don't know a whole lot about. Hopefully we'll get to see them a little bit today and get a feel for what they look like and what they bring to the table. But I think that's maybe the room that I'm surprised that we didn't talk a whole lot about them, but I think there were things to talk about.
Now, I did get a chuckle. Kevin Reynolds of the Salt Lake Tribune asked Kyle Whittingham about potentially chasing a portal quarterback in the transfer portal period. And then the best answer I thought on the whole bunch of it was when he asked Andy Ludwig about it, Michelle. And I'm assuming you probably heard this. And he said, well, if that's what the head coach wants to do, that's what we will do. And you and I both know Andy. It's kind of that goes to the point of who Andy is. What do you think the realistic possibility is that they do look at the transfer portal for a quarterback?
I think they absolutely will take a look. You know, I think Utah is very lucky in the sense, and I mean, we'll see transfers out. I would be really surprised to see anyone at this point that Utah would really want to keep exiting the program. But then again, it's the wild, wild west, and you just don't know. But if things go the way that I think they logically should go, Utah's in a very lucky space that it feels like they have everyone they need. It's just shoring things up. And I think quarterback is one of those areas they might want to shore up a little. And it's not that they're not pleased with what's happened. Cam has come back and progressed every week and is looking more like his old self. There's no concerns there. Brandon Rose, I think, has maybe surprised people a little bit in that he really took a jump from where he was at in fall camp when he got hurt, but was kind of going to be the guy up to that point and had really just elevated what he was doing then this past 4 weeks in spring. In fact, I think Kyle Whittingham said this past week that he's probably played his best football as a youth to this date. So, you know, that's a really great development that he's getting where they maybe want him to be. And then, you know, you have the freshman Isaac Wilson, who has shown really well for a freshman. I'm going to venture a guess that probably asking a lot to ask him to be the backup quarterback this year, and not that he couldn't surprise people and end up doing that, but I think the expectation is we're not putting that pressure on him unless we absolutely have to. And so then I think, you know, you just want maybe one more guy in there if you can get a solid contributor, and that's where Utah's at. They're not taking bodies to desperately fill holes. They are looking for solid contributors at certain spots, and quarterback is one of those spots.
Flipping over the defense for a moment, it feels like the defense, even though it has to replace their safeties at that position, it feels like they've got a very strong defense. It feels like on paper, Michelle, where do things stand on the defensive side of the football? Is there any, I guess, a group that you're looking a little closer than others?
Yeah, I think Utah, I think that's where the most questions were for Utah to answer was in the defense. And specifically the defensive backfield, the safeties, and the one cornerback spot. And it sounds like they got their answers. They had a lot of the guys in-house, with K.O. Johnson, Smith Snowden, all those guys, you know, have really stepped up to the plate. And then they did a really good job, from everything I'm being told, in their evaluation of bringing guys in that look like they are going to be big gets for them. Talking about, oh, goodness. Why am I blanking on his name? Johnson. Oh. The transfer from Georgia Tech.
Keenan Johnson. Yes. Trust me, I was right there. Johnson. I was right there with you. I'm like, it's on the tip of my tongue. Anyways, go ahead.
I know. It's the worst when that happens, and it's always the most inopportune moments, too. So you're welcome to, you know, listen to me fumble that on radio. It's fine. But I mean, he's impressed. He's really come in and impressed. Coach Shaw was talking the other day about how he's had some great cornerbacks come through his room, but this guy's speed, his closing speed on plays is elite and has left him a little speechless. He's kind of said, I've never had anyone that plays like he does. So, you know, I think that's incredibly encouraging. And then Cameron Calhoun from Michigan also has been a great add for him, is doing some great things. The great depth piece, has maybe a little bit more that he needs to work on and grow with, but there's optimism there for him. So I think Utah got all the answers they wanted on defense. And I know that there's maybe some question about linebacker with Lavani DeMooney, you know, getting the long-term injury. I hesitate to call it a season-ending injury because it was never referred that way out loud. But he's certainly going to be out for some time, and Utah's going to have to deal with that. But it sounds like Sione Fotu is ready to step up into that role. He's knocked that mission rust off, and he's going to be good to go in that third spot in Utah's linebacker room. So it sounds so Pollyanna, like everything's good and great, but like you can just kind of feel the energy. They feel really, really good about where they are on both sides of the ball.
Can I ask you this, Michelle? Are you surprised that Kyle Whittingham has continued to do a spring game all this time? Because you know I cover BYU football pretty heavily, and Kalani kind of referred to it as, like, we don't really like the spring games, or like you said, you don't want to show anything to your opponents. Are you surprised that Kyle has continued to have a traditional spring game?
Yeah, it's like a yes and no for me all at the same time. Like, I with the way he is about injury reports and some of that kind of stuff, it's like, well, yeah, I'm kind of maybe surprised. But on the other hand, I think Kyle looks at it as another day of practice. And it ends up being, you know, kind of fun for the fans. It's a way for them to kind of engage, especially now that a lot of the other stuff has been shut down from years past. So there's maybe a little bit of anticipation for the event. And I think the guys like going out and playing in front of the crowd. That seemed to be a consistent message the past couple of days during media, is that they're excited to get out there and kind of sort of play, you know, a game the way that they would in a regular season. And I think even more so this year, after the kind of year that they had last year, where a lot of guys sat out with injury. So I can see it both ways, but I think the benefits for Whittingham, for Kyle, far outweigh the negatives. And so I think he feels like he can vanilla it up enough that, you know, it's just all in good fun and you can't really take anything from the game.
Now, you and I have talked about this. This is kind of one of those rare things. This game is going to be televised on the Pac-12 network, but this is a program headed to the Big 12 Conference officially on July 1. But give me your sense of how Utah feels as they get ready to join the Big 12. Have they talked a lot about early preparations or anything like that this spring?
You know what? It's just been business as usual. I don't recall a whole lot of exciting, interesting conversation around the fact that they're moving conferences. I'm sure they are preparing and looking into, you know, what they're going to be facing in the Big 12. But I think to them, at the end of the day, it's really no different than what they've been doing in the Pac-12. And okay. So it's just a, you know what, we're just going to shut up and get to work. That's really kind of the attitude that's been there. I think there's some excitement to maybe play some new teams. But I don't think they're looking at it as this crazy novel thing, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. No, it makes a ton of sense. So looking forward to it, Michelle. Obviously, we'll be tracking all your work, KSLSports.com. Looking forward to seeing what the outcomes are. But thanks for carving out some time, and we will catch up with you next week, all right?
Sure will. And enjoy the rest of your day, Jake, and have a great rest of our show.
There you go, Michelle Bodkin, typically my co-host sitting opposite me here in studio, but a big thank you to her for taking the time. She is on her way up to Utah, their spring game, the 22 Forever game. Looking forward to that. And once again, keep it keep your eyes on KSLSports.com for full recap, all the reaction to that as Utah wraps up spring camp. All right, coming up here in just a minute, around hour one of the program by going and looking around the world of sports for the more dumb or stupid things out there. It is Technical Fouls, and it's coming up next right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You will feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal foul, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
As you just heard, it is time now for Technical Fouls here on the KSL Sports Zone, where we talk about the more dumb and just overall bad things in the world of sports and hand out what we like to call Technical Fouls. Let's start off with the ongoing saga involving Shohei Ohtani and his former interpreter, Ippe Mazuhara. Now, most of you know that Ippe Mazuhara stole allegedly even more than $16 million. You heard that right. $16 million from Shohei to cover and at least help cover his gambling debts. Crazy, crazy things. He is now under federal investigation. He turned himself in and then somehow was able to get freed on $25,000 bond. This is a guy, folks, that if you believe what the DOJ and the U.S. Attorney, I guess the U.S. attorneys out there that are prosecuting this, he racked up $180 million in gambling debts. Yes, he did win 140 some odd million, but he has $41 million outstanding that he owes to at least one, if not more, odds makers, bookies, if you will, that apparently have been threatening and all kinds of crazy stuff. One of the bookies, if not the main one he's been working with, was already under DOJ investigation. And California is one of the states, like the state of Utah, where sports betting is not legal currently. I don't know. I don't know what is going on here. But Ippe Mazuhara surrendered to law enforcement yesterday. He was released on bond shortly after an unsecured $25,000 bond, colloquially known as a signature bond. That means that he does not put up any cash or collateral to be released. If he violates the conditions of his bond, he will then be on the hook for $25,000. So there you go. That's why he was able to be released. But this is crazy. And he's been ordered to undergo gambling addiction treatment. Yeah, if you racked up $180 plus million in gambling debts, holy smokes, dude. And by the way, he hoodwinked apparently Shohei to plunder more than $16 million from him to help cover this. And he also, if you read some of the stories about this, one of the bookies reached out to him and said, "Hey, I'm glad Shohei's covering for you." And then he essentially says in a text back, "Oh, no, he's not. I've been stealing from him." Bro. Don't put things on the record that, first off, that the DOJ can, you know, subpoena and pretty much nail you for. But this is a crazy story. They have maintained all along that no bets were placed on baseball. It's incredible to me to think that he racked up $180 million in gambling debts. Yes, he won quite a bit, $140 million in winnings, but $41 million hole that you were in, this is absolutely nuts, though, and a technical foul on Mizuhara here, because it's just, I don't know what he's going to do here, because that's a lot of money that, by the way, if you think you're going to rack up that type of dough, where's it going to come from? You're going to have to take it from a guy like Shohei, who's got all that money. I don't know. I just don't get it. Staying in the world of betting in a way, but it relates a little bit. A wrestler, a two-time world champion, Olympic bronze medalist by the name of Frank Chamizo, said he turned down a bribe of $300,000 to deliberately lose a match in last week's European Wrestling Olympic qualification tournament in Baku, Azerbaijan. Chamizo, who competes for Italy after emigrating from Cuba in 2011, controversially lost the semifinal match to Azerbaijani freestyle wrestler Turan Bayramov. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Following a disputed late call, he said this, quote, "I knew I had to give a double, triple in Azerbaijan because I was fighting in their country and they had brought everybody. I did it, but then something happened that is echoes of wrestling many years ago." He says this, I want to say it. "They came to me and offered me $300,000 to lose. I don't want to say who, but it happened the morning of the weigh-in." Chamizo says he refused because, quote, I don't only represent myself, but also Italy. It's not easy to break my integrity. So props to Chamizo, even though he still lost, he could have easily been on the take for that 300 large. I'm guessing that as a wrestler, it's not necessarily like baseball where you're collecting $700 million contracts in the case of Shohei Ohtani, but principled man, it sounds like, for Mr. Chamizo. So technical foul on whoever the cronies were that were trying to bribe him and buy him off. But Chamizo, I get a little bit of a gold star there for holding strong. Now, one final one. Technical foul goes to Terrell Suggs. He was arrested earlier this week in Scottsdale, California, on charges of threatening and intimidating and disorderly conduct with a weapon stemming from a March 10th incident outside of a local Starbucks in Arizona. According to the police report, Suggs, who is 41 now, was driving a black Ford Range Rover. A black Range Rover that had driven past the drive-thru order area. Upon backing his vehicle up, Suggs allegedly made contact with another vehicle. While there was no damage to the vehicle, an argument ensued per the report. Then a second argument ensued as Suggs left the Starbucks, Suggs allegedly threatening to kill the alleged victim from the other vehicle, and oh, by the way, brandished a handgun in his left hand. Terrell Suggs, bro, you can't do that. You've had an incredible career. He's got just one of those all-time type careers from what he did for the Baltimore Ravens. But geez, you can't do that. He played 17 years in the NFL, 16 of them for the Ravens, made 7 Pro Bowls, 2011 AP Defensive Player of the Year, a really, really talented player. But this is a bad, bad look. He said this: I was in a quiet area of Scottsdale in the middle of the day on a Starbucks drive-thru near my home when an incident happened in a vehicle behind me. I was getting coffee. I was not looking for any trouble. When the man in the other vehicle escalated the situation, I feared for my safety, not knowing what his intentions were throughout the incident. I was the one who felt in danger while fearing I would be followed home and for the safety of my family nearby at my residence. Well, alas, you have now been charged, and you will be facing a judge, it looks like, and we'll see what happens. All right, so crazy, crazy stuff out there in the world of sports, but man, it seems to never stop out there. So we'll come back on the other side, though. We'll get back into some basketball talk. David Locke had an interesting look at how the Jazz rebuild probably should look in his mind, and I agree with it, and it actually uses a modern day, from this season actually, a look at a team that the Jazz have played recently that he says is kind of the cautionary tale of what the Jazz don't want to do. We'll get to that next, right here on the Saturday Show.